the protagonist is a disturbed person.
Yeah.
But in kind of a, like a very relatable way, like so, like a very
saying something about you, Josh.
No, about like a general American.
You know when you're pulling all the skin off of something?
I could really, man, I really identify with this.
Roll for host. Old school generation 4.
5. Mike is going to be host again. I can feel it. Mike, we have an hour.
I know.
Dude, 46, 45, 59, 4. 44.
Seriously? I went with 5.
No!
Sweet.
Can we roll off for last place?
No, you can't.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. We are doing a special fast show today. A slow show? We're doing a fast show today. I am Chaz. Join me this week, as they do every week, are Josh. Say hi, Josh.
Josh, hi.
Mike. Say hi, Mike.
Hello.
This is the show where we talk about news, games, culture, politics, fun, interesting electronic gizmos. Mike, how's your week been? Oh, before I say that, thanks for listening to the show. Please go to our, anything we talk about, if you're interested in it, if you want to buy games, do so through our webpage. Go to our website, theescortmission.com, click through our Amazon link, buy stuff there, and help the show out. Mike, how's your week
been? I agree with Charles that you should do these things.
Also, we have no idea if you can hear us at all because we're recording it differently this week. So
yeah, that's true.
So best of luck.
If the audio quality is a little different this week, it's because we got a new portable audio recorder. Doing this on location at Josh's pad. So my week was pretty good. I just wanted to mention a couple interesting things that I noticed in the news.
You should mention them.
I'm going to mention them. These are the things I'm about to mention. Here I go mentioning them. So Dear Abby. You know who Dear Abby is, right?
Generally.
She died. She's totally dead.
Death comes to us all.
Also, did you know that Dear Abby, aka Pauline Phillips, was the twin sister of Ann Landers.
Yes, I did know.
Wait, her name was Pauline Phillips?
Pauline Phillips. I don't know why she was called Dear Abby. It was not Dear Pauline.
It was a pseudonym.
I think Dear Pauline works. I don't think Abby is like a million times better name for Dear.
It's just not the same name.
Yeah, dead woman. Why did you do that?
Oh, arbitrary...
arbitrary pseudonym.
Anonymity.
Yeah, right. Pseudonym right. For your...
Anyway, she died. That sucks.
Speaking of those things, Paul F. Tompkins does an awesome routine on one of his stand-up shows, which is called Advice to the Probably Dead, where he answers advice letters written to, like, Dear Abby and Ann Landers, etc., from, like, 1950. he gets actual letters and then answers them from today's vantage point. So they're all, like, you know... You know, I feel like my husband is making eyes at his secretary, and then he answers them, you know, from today's...
That sounds very Onion-esque.
Yeah, check it out. It's good.
Also, in other really random news, Criss Cross is reuniting for a concert.
What?
Criss effing Cross.
One time only?
Well, at least to begin with, but that's just where it begins. Wait, the new album, I'm sure, will be in stores this year.
The question is, are they going to wear their clothes backwards?
They have to. Oh, how could they not?
I don't know, man. Kiss came back without the makeup at one point.
Yeah, and they weren't as good. So there you go.
But were they ever good?
They were better.
Kiss was all right. Come on.
There's like a Kiss song I like.
Dude, yeah, exactly.
There's rock and a Kiss roll song night party like. Every day. Come on, that's classic.
Case closed.
You have to at least, you know, acknowledge that that is a song. All right.
I acknowledge that that is a sign.
All right, acknowledged. So in non-random news, actually it's still pretty random, but so I mentioned many weeks ago about this cool game called Evoland that was done by some guy in a Ludum Dare, like, you know, game jam kind of weekend thing. It was the game where you basically start out and all you can do is move right, and then you get the achievement to move left,
yes,
and then up and down, and then eventually it goes from, like, super simplistic to, you know, 8-bit graphics, 16-bit graphics. It's sort of like a little, you know, cool thing about the evolution of games. So that guy is making a full-on, crazy, awesome version of that game, and that the one that I talked about is now called Evoland Classic and is on the web, but he's making a real, for, you know, like, legit game that is going to be more full-fledged coming out next month. So that looks really sweet because I enjoyed that game and I totally think it would make for a better long form game. So
interesting.
That's my random news. Unless you guys have random news. All right.
I discovered I'm kind of a fan of the Roku. I like the Roku. I don't own one, but I recommend it to people who don't have like internet streaming on their TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I got one for my sister and I tried it a little more than I had in previous experiences. And almost immediately upon like using it at all for any length of time, you discover it does not have a YouTube app.
What?
Can you believe that thing does not have a YouTube app? I had no idea, and it was really baffling to me, and I totally lost a lot of respect for that device.
And it doesn't have a browser? So you can just go to YouTube?
No, it doesn't have a browser. It has like an app store for Roku apps, and there's like a ton of miscellaneous internet video streaming apps, and yet like missing a critical one like YouTube is so brutal, it seems like it must be intentional.
It's got to either be a thing with like Google said no or they said no or something, because there's no way it wouldn't happen.
Well, YouTube apps are on like so many things
that
I wouldn't think it was Google. I would think it's Roku's choice not
weird
to put it there.
Yeah, it seems
because they want you to get all your channels and stuff from them, and like maybe they're worried that YouTube is becoming more of a ecosystem for channels,
which it is,
that people could live 100% within the YouTube app
and
on the Roku instead
stuff
of use the Roku apps. So anyway, the end result is it's ridiculous, because I wanted to show my sister a trailer, and I was like, oh, let me just play it on YouTube on your Roku. No option to do that.
Lame.
Could not find any method of showing her this trailer via the Roku thing.
You know, this is why I went with an HD PC rather than one of those. I was considering the Boxy Box quite heavily at the time, and it was specifically for stuff like that I decided to go just with a little Windows PC, because I'm like, it's like less good as a 10-foot interface couch thing, but even so, I'll definitely be able to watch whatever I want to just with a browser.
Preaching to the choir. Yeah. I love PCs on TVs, but the Roku is like $40.
Yeah.
So
I got one for my parents, actually. So
yeah,
they have it. I never looked for stuff on YouTube before, so
yeah, I mean, we've got two HD PCs, one on, you know, on both of our main TVs, and I'm with you in general that it's nice to just have a computer that can do anything and you don't have to worry about it being locked down. But if you really only want to use a few like streaming options, there are stuff, you know, like the Apple TV. We love using the Apple TV, and it's not a full-fledged computer, but what it does great, and we love it, and it's way cheaper.
A lot of the TVs
and
that
smaller,
you buy now
have that built in. Right, and that's where it's going. At least that's what it seems. I think my next TV probably will have most of that shit built in.
Yeah, just has.
The interesting thing with Blu-ray players that are around $100 is they often have some of those apps, including YouTube, built in.
Yeah, I think my Blu-ray player has YouTube.
Right, but they don't have like the full channel selection that Roku does. But they cost twice as much.
They don't have Crackle.
So they have like fewer apps, but maybe the better critical apps.
Right.
Potentially, depending on which random ass Blu-ray device you get. Mm-hmm. In other random news, I heard this week that new Jobs movie is spelled
really
lowercase
we're gonna do
J,
this?
Capital O, capital B, capital S, and I had to mention to you guys in real life, like, the iPhone goes lowercase, capital, lowercase. The iMac goes lowercase, capital, lowercase. All the i products go lowercase, capital, lowercase.
That's true, they do.
Like, why does lowercase, capital, capital, capital make any sense at all? Like, Charles says, any reasonable person should recognize that this is a reference to an iPhone and iMac and stuff, right?
No, I said most people will recognize the reference.
Most people will recognize.
Because the critical part is the lowercase I, and the lowercase j references that.
No.
And even if they do not immediately get it, they will, as you did, go, what the fuck are they talking about? And then cause an hour-long conversation with their friends about this movie, and thus gain more publicity for the movie. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, but gaining negative publicity.
It's not negative publicity. All publicity is good publicity.
Like, I no longer am interested in the Jobs movie.
Because of that.
And yes,
typography has driven him away.
Yes, we are essentially promoting it by talking about it on this podcast.
I'm going to go watch it. I don't care about it.
But I am less interested than I was before. You know.
If anything should turn you off to the movie, it shouldn't be the topography. It should be the, like, you know, maybe the 1-minute trailer that they showed, and you know, Ashton Kutcher trying really hard not to be Ashton Kutcher in a role.
And apparently Waz says that that scene
never did actually happen. Like that, oh my god, they made stuff up to make good, to make an interesting movie. That happens all the time, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for random news.
There's random politics. There's a kind of interesting argument over the code base for the Obama campaign's election software, which apparently they did this huge open source project to for the software that ran their campaign. And the Republicans did a, like, not open source, like a closed source project that was, you know, meant to, like, give them, you know, streaming data and real-time exit polling and data coming back to their campaign, and famously, like, had this big crash on the night and didn't run. They didn't stress test it, and they didn't, like, beta test it sufficiently, whatever. While the Obama campaign's code base it used a bunch of open source material, but now the campaign does not want to open source the work that they did for the campaign.
But is that a requirement of the license?
It's not. I don't know the specific, like, new licensing, you know, that stuff. I know that the developers who worked on it, who, you know, worked for free and worked in this open source fashion, want their work that was built on open source components to be released, and the campaign is refusing to do so, or has at least to this point refused to do so. They basically feel like it will allow the Republicans to catch up if they do it. The open sourcers and the coders are saying, like, look, this is how you maintain the pace of development. The reason that the closed source people were so far behind is because they only do it once every 4 years. If you don't release it, then it's going to stagnate. And also, you will piss off all developers who you might then get to come work for you in 4 more years, kind of thing. I don't know. Thoughts? Lame? Cool? Open source? Closed source?
It's interesting, but I don't have, like, a strong opinion on it because I don't know the specifics over whether they violated licensing agreements or not. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Unless I looked into it in depth.
What I read did not mention that at all, so I would assume they're technically within their rights not to do it. It didn't mention, like, and they are breaking the law by doing this, right? So I would guess that they, you know, it's like the Joko thing. Technically, they're within their rights, but, you know, is it a bad idea? Are you further, you know, damning your options in the future if you piss off this whole group of developers who helped you so much?
By Joko, you mean Glee doing Jonathan Coulton's cover?
Yes.
Or covering it.
Covering his cover.
Yes.
Essentially.
With no legal obligation to credit him, but potentially a moral obligation that they did not live up to.
Like, do you think they just thought that he would say no?
No, I think they thought, we don't have to.
Or it's just like,
it's just like a why bother? Like, potentially, to giving them the most possible benefit of the doubt, they might just have thought they didn't have the time to contact him, and, like, we just have to get into production and go and do it. Like, that's the most credible, like, or not credible, rather, the most, you know, lenient thought process that you might grant them if you're being charitable.
So it's really more like the ask for forgiveness rather than permission strategy? Yeah,
or just like, you know, it doesn't matter. We're legally allowed to do this. We're going to do it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean,
very corporate.
It paints them in a ridiculously corporate brush stroke, which is not surprising.
They are Fox.
Yeah. Still kind of sucks.
Yep.
For him.
Other random news? Anybody? In random news, I went to the Marriott over the long weekend. I went to a Marriott in Dana Point, called the Laguna Cliffs Marriott, which I heartily recommend. It's totally awesome if you want a quick vacation. It's like 1 hour and 10 minutes away, super close from San Diego. East Coast listeners, is more than 1 hour and 10 minutes away. But it's awesome. It's like, it's really close. We went in December, but it was sunny because of Southern California. It was like 75 degrees. And, you know, so because it was essentially off season, it's very off season as far as hotels are concerned or how they calculate it. It was cheap and it was just like, it's great. It's right up above. It's like on these cliffs in the middle of a big park, like a Dana Point public park. So you can walk around there. You go down the cliffs, and there's like a harbor, kind of a Seaport Village type area with a bunch of restaurants and stuff. And it was awesome.
Dana Point's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had never really been out there.
I dig it.
That's sweet.
It was cool.
Yeah.
Oh.
Media.
I can do some media stuff.
Yeah, do some media stuff.
So I watched.
We're going fast.
So I watched the pilot episode.
That was less than 15 minutes.
This is good.
I watched the pilot episode of King of the Nerds.
Oh, yes.
My
How did you watch it?
My dirty little secret. I watched it on their website, on TBS's website.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And
are they doing all their episodes that way, or just the premiere?
I don't know. I'm not sure I'll watch another one, so it's not really that
important. So you don't care?
Well, okay, I'll just say this. Like, I saw the preview. It looks horrible. It's a reality show. It has all the reality show trappings. You know, they take...
It's a reality competition?
It's a competition. They take 11, like, self-proclaimed nerds, you know, like math nerds, science nerds, video game nerds, comic nerds, you know, the whole gamut, and put them in a house called Nerdvana, full of cool geeky stuff, and then every week they have two of them have a nerd off where they do something geeky, and whoever loses gets kicked off. So... The one good thing I'll say about it is that these people, while obviously seeming coached, you know, to make good TV, and they say lots of dumb cliche things like every reality show is, they actually actually seem like nerds. You know, like they're not like actors who are just acting nerdy. Like these are people who were probably actually outcasts when they were now. and even before when they were in school. So I sympathize with them immediately that way, unlike normal reality show people who I can't really identify with. Because I'm like, okay, I felt like an outcast sometimes. I felt like I didn't fit in. I felt nerdy. I understand where they're coming from. But when they're put into this context and they say a bunch of cliche things and they all act like super crazy nerdy and not just like that's a part of their personality, like that is all they are, is their chosen nerddom. They feel pretty one-dimensional and not real, which is weird. And also, the first competition they did was chess, spoiler alert, except it was huge chess pieces, and the people who moved the chess pieces was this, you know, incredibly scantily clad, like, anime-ish costume-wearing woman who, you know, bends over so the camera can get a nice shot of her backside every time she moves a piece, and when someone takes a piece, a super Conan the Barbarian-esque kind of guy comes and, like, chops the top off of the chess piece and, like, red confetti, like, flies out. And I'm like, ah! You know... I shouldn't be surprised, but, you know, it had some good points, and then they blow it by doing bullshit like that, so.
You seem to fail to mention the best part of it, which was that, tell me if I'm right.
Did you also watch it?
No, I heard about it.
Oh.
Is that they were supposed to pick teams for something?
Yes.
And so they had two team leaders?
So they picked two team leaders, and those two team leaders picked the rest of the people. Now, of course, there's 11 people. So that means one person is not going to get picked mathematically, and that person didn't get picked, and they felt bad, and one of the hosts said, oh my god, there's nothing nerdier than not getting picked for a team. You get to pick, like, the team that has immunity next
or something. That was the winner.
Yeah.
The winner was the one who didn't get picked for either team.
Yeah, and then had to get put on...
the most nerdy person there.
So it was like, it had these
little... That's a cool touch.
That seems brilliant, right?
Yeah, right, but so much of it is just so reality show stupid that you still want to slap everyone involved. So, I don't know. Anyway, I watched that. That was interesting. A couple albums that I would recommend. There's this guy named Charlie McCarron. He actually was recommended to me by this other musician I know online. He started a podcast called Composer Quest, where he basically talks to musicians every week and talks to them about how they write music and stuff, so that's pretty cool. But he was in a band and called the Cage Tones, and they did an album called Did You See the Moon, which is, the best way I can describe it is electronic jazz. There are some lyrics to some of the songs, some synths, but there's also a lot of brass. Like, one of them plays, I think, the trombone or something. And so imagine, like, chill electronica with, you know, trombone leads over it. It's a very interesting mix. And this guy and the other guy, Nick Simon, who did the album, did it in a month for RPM, which is a month-long, like, make-an-album challenge, which I did once several years ago.
That sounds cool.
So I recommend that. You can get it for free on Bandcamp. Another one that I got free... I forget how. called Sun Lux. So S-O-N and then L-U-X. Has an album called At War with Walls and Mazes. Now, this is really tight. This is, like, the kind of random stuff that, like, some NPR show might play. It's very Radiohead-esque. He's got a very interesting and unique voice that, you know, stands out. Very dark and moody, kind of chill electronica kind of stuff. But I would actually think that Josh or Charles, you would actually quite like it.
Sun Lux.
He's done other stuff. That's his newest thing. You can get it for free through some website that I got it through. So
wait, that?
That particular album is like...
What's the album?
It's called At War with Walls and Mazes.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So, highly recommend that. Yeah, that's good for me.
Yeah.
I read Warm Bodies.
You sure you didn't touch them?
That's also good. This is the new zombie Twilight movie. You see that?
With the dude and the
See that trailer?
The guy. It was based on a book.
Yes, this is the book.
You read the whole thing?
Yeah, it's right there. It's short. It's a It's
Is it awesome? Tell me it's awesome.
It's pop. You know, short, easy book.
It's Twilight for males.
It's all right. It's interesting. It's relatively unique. I kind of liked it. The one, like, really weird dichotomy or, like issue that I kind of had with just the concept was that although, the protagonist, the primary character, is supposed to be this zombie that is only, like, half conscious for a lot of it and kind of, like can't speak in more than like one or two words at a time and can't fully form thoughts and stuff, and yet it's written in first person, like relatively eloquently
as that guy.
Yes. So as when it's written in first person from a zombie character, and like
does not make sense.
He can only speak in one-word sentences at the beginning, you know? But he can think
elegantly?
But he can think eloquently. It doesn't really make sense. Like, I don't know why the book wasn't just written in third person. I kind of had a problem with it the whole time. Now, if you can get over that one hurdle, then it's good and it's interesting and it's easy to read. And the movie sounds like it might be interesting in the same way. Except, I faintly remember, like, first-person narration from the movie trailer, too.
Yeah.
So that the movie could theoretically have the exact same problem.
Is it one of those things where it's just, like, people play with how zombies work? Like, 28 days later, they were fast, you know? They're just like, these zombies are self-aware?
It is a unique take on zombies in general, yes. Yeah, these zombies are just, like, infected humans that,
that don't have the brain lust.
Are not all the way dead dead. Mm-hmm. There are some like super dead dead skeletons, and they are the new enemy.
So there are other people that are like him then?
Yeah, there's a bunch of these half dead infected zombies.
And then there's that are really, really
mostly
zombies.
Unconscious. And they're kind of like getting trained essentially by the dead dead skeletons.
Seems your friend here is only mostly dead.
Yeah.
Now, does this take place in a post-apocalyptic world?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so it's still, super virus has made most people zombies, but these zombies are special.
Probably. Yeah, okay. It's just in one city, so you don't know what the rest of the world looks like, but...
Huh. Interesting.
It's pretty fun.
Cool.
It's also pretty silly, like, teen trash or whatever also.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I watched God Bless America. Have you heard of this?
I've heard the phrase, yes.
Yeah, it's a new movie? It's a Netflix streaming, a couple years old. Man, it was effed up. It was really interesting. It's basically, you know how like Dexter takes does the very difficult thing of having a protagonist be a murderer?
The anti-hero, yes.
Right, yeah. This is one of those where the protagonist is... a disturbed person.
Yeah.
But in kind of a very relatable way, like a very
saying something about you, Josh.
No, about like a general American.
You know when you're pulling all the skin off of somebody.
I really identify with that scene.
No, what they do
you did it wrong though.
What they do is like for the first 15 minutes, of the movie, they try as hard as they can to make you get super irritated at everyone and American culture and just like just the shallowness of people and the general lack of respect and you know care that random strangers have for each other and you. And so he's, you know, he just gets fed up and yeah, it goes from there. And
this is a drama, a comedy.
It's a drama, but like maybe a dark comedy kind of.
Is this the Bobcat Goldthwait movie? Like I didn't
laugh out loud a lot. Oh, is it? Oh my God. I don't think it is. No, but no, he's
like a director guy now.
Okay. No, I don't think it felt like him. Okay. It, theoretically could be. Because
he did a movie that was like about a murder spree. Is there like another, like a girl?
There is a girl. Maybe it is him.
A little, like, just like a younger girl.
Yeah, you know what? It does seem like him. I didn't even know it was him.
Yeah, this is a Bobcat Goldthwait directed movie. Yeah. Directed and written. Yeah.
I didn't even look at the credits. Yeah.
That guy's name, it's, man.
It seems so like awesome. Him, you're right. What was the last thing I watched by him? In high school?
Police Academy? Wasn't he Police Academy?
Oh, Robin Williams. World's Greatest Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just watched that. That's a Bobcat Goldthwait film. That is actually totally effed up and really funny, too.
I think that's his M.O.
I highly recommend World's Greatest Dad with Robin Williams. Because it stars Robin Williams, it was not at all what I expected. Like, it is vulgar as hell.
Uh-huh.
But it is actually outstanding. It's really funny, I thought. This one I didn't think was particularly funny. I thought it was, like, a bit too preachy and kind of messed up. But kind of interesting and not too messed up. Watched all the Aliens. I like the Aliens.
We just watched Prometheus before recording the show.
We did.
Yeah. I like it. They don't.
I can move on. No, Charles liked it.
I liked it.
Oh, you did?
I liked it fine. All I said I thought it was as good as Aliens.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Alien was your favorite.
But Alien was my favorite.
And I'm finding that maybe I don't like monster movies that much, and I really wanted it to be Moon, but it wasn't. Go watch Moon.
All right, I need to go watch Moon.
You really need to watch Moon. You'll like it.
And Bourne Legacy was surprisingly good because I don't literally think I like Jeremy Renner that much, but he grew on me after watching Bourne Legacy. It's not quite as good as the other Bournes, but it is good enough that it is better than most other dumb action movies in that category.
It was hard for him to be awesome in Avengers because Robert Downey Jr. is just, he takes all the awesome.
And he's just an archer.
Robert Downey Jr. and then
the Hulk guy too.
Brennan?
The
guy who played the Hulk is really good as the Hulk.
Yeah,
as Bruce Banner.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Whoever, that guy was good. Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He literally just shoots arrows. That's his power.
Yeah, he's. I don't know.
Really accurately, bro. Like super. Yeah, accurately.
But non superheroes can shoot accurately
until he runs out of arrows.
Yeah, he never runs out of arrows. It's his thing.
Media stuff. I listened to Losing My Religion transposed electronically into a major key.
I also listened to that. That's rather well done.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's fun and weird.
Yeah.
And weird and fun. It's what it sounds like, but it's cool.
Yeah.
I funded a Kickstarter project. I guess this is more random news than media. For a bike lock called the Interlock, which is an in-frame bike lock. It's built into the seat post, and then the lock just slides out of the seat post, and then you have the bike lock.
So you replace your seat post.
You replace the seat post.
And when you're biking, you look really elegant and lockless.
It's just, yeah, and you don't have to carry a big freaking U-bolt in a bag or on the handlebars or something else, right? It's just always in there as part of the bike, integrated, just like disappears, and then you zoom, pull it out, lock it around, whatever.
And what kind of lock is it? Just like combination? Or key?
No, I mean, it's a key. It's a keyed lock.
Oh, okay.
And then it's like a bike chain wrapped in plastic cable.
Action. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty cool. Smart idea. I found, because I needed to get, I recorded a really long voice memo on my iPhone using the iOS memo app that comes with it. If it's over 2 minutes long, you can't email that shit off the phone. There's no way to get it off the phone. Other than
syncing,
but in order to sync, it doesn't sync separately. You have to sync that as part of a music sync, and
yeah, it treats it like a song.
It treats it like a song, which is dumb. Which means because I don't have Music Sync turned on, if I were to turn it on to try to get this off, I would have to resync my entire freaking library because it treats it as the first time you have synced if you turn it off and then turn it back on again, which is asinine and ridiculous. iTunes is balls. But I found, because of this problem, a piece of shareware called Touch Copy, which allows you to just pull that shit right off, no problem. So Touch Copy, if you need to get individual pieces of media off an iPhone, you just plug it in with USB. It's a Windows app, and it's awesome. Really good.
Doesn't require rooting your phone.
Doesn't require jailbreak. No, it runs on Windows.
Doesn't break.
You just USB Apple your phone.
Apple DRM or anything.
It probably does, or it's probably circumventing something.
I've heard of... There's other utilities that let you look at the file structure of your iPhone. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's cool. Breaking anything.
That's neat.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, iTunes sucks.
And then one other... iTunes is so bloated. My God. Anyway, I read a book called Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, which is...
Sounds saucy.
It was fun. It's a cool book. It's set in the present day, and I mean like the very present day.
As you're reading it, that day?
It's set that day. It literally has... A lot of it takes place on the Google campus. It's written... It deals with a lot of Google employees, but it's a fable. It's really like a fable. It might be like 130, 140 pages, very quick. I went and bought it on a bookstore while I was on this vacation, actually, in Laguna Beach, or in where I was, Dana Point. Bought it because I thought it looked interesting, read like the inside of the jacket, and then started reading it. I'm like, gosh, I'm really chugging along. This is really cool and fun. I would probably call it young adult. Like, it's totally appropriate for, like, young hacker kid to read, you know, if you're, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 or something and into computers. Very, very good for that age group. I also really liked it. And then I looked on the back jacket, and one of the people who blurbed it is a weird synchronicity, is Nick Harkaway, the author of the book that I've been recommending. Yeah, the author of Angel Maker that I've recommended. So that was weird. I was like... Oh, snap, it's the guy from the thing. It's like weird that I picked both those books up. Angel Maker was recommended. This I picked up literally at random, and it had a blurb from the same author. I don't know. That was strange. But that book is really good. It's fun. It's like a guy who works in a bookstore, or a guy who gets fired as part of the dot-com bust and then goes and takes a job at a rare used bookstore and then discovers secret mysteries.
This sounds
to
fun.
The universe. Yeah, it's cool.
Should make a movie out of that.
Yeah, it would be a good movie, actually. Games?
Games.
Totally.
Played some games.
Josh, you play games?
Go, yeah. Josh.
So, I tried to play more of Mark of the Ninja. So, I played like the first
Game of the Year.
Three levels, and I like 100%, 100% stealth and... No killed,
nice.
Like the first couple levels.
Nice.
And it just wasn't really fun. I don't like that game. Like, I want my side scrollers to be a bit more open world, or like and about exploration instead of.
So you want?
You want Metroidvania?
Or I want,
you want
them
Mark of the Nit?
Or I want them like faster and. You know, either more like Knit or more like Super Meat Boy. The weird niche that it's in, where it's like a kind of slow stealth side scroller. That it's just not my thing.
Did you try to play one all actiony and balls out? Because you can do that too.
Only the first level. I still need to do that. I'll do that on the next level.
Huh.
But
that's an option, especially when you get the suits that enable those types of. Yeah,
I don't think I haven't 100% stealth any level.
I destroyed like all your guys' scores on the first couple levels.
I don't have the patience for that.
Because apparently none of you guys have ever done that.
I've done it.
It
wasn't the first level, but I 100% stealth, no kill.
Yeah, like the first couple or whatever. But it's all right. Anyway, then I uncontrollably played a lot more Tokyo Jungle.
Yes, we've seen proof.
Because that game is not fabulous, but it is really interesting. It's a unique thing, and I really want to unlock the cool animals. So,
and somehow Josh can get past the horrible repeating music that sounds like it makes it a game show.
Seriously, the way Josh described it, I guess 2 weeks ago maybe, made me super interested in it. I'm like, God, that sounds ultra fascinating. And we sat down to play it, and it has like this incredibly shitty, like, I don't know, 16 bars of crappy techno that plays over the top of it and completely takes you out of it. It's supposed to be like post-apocalypse, like you're an animal running around, roguelike. This, it's speaking my language. And then this like dumb music and these dumb audio cues that make it sound, as Mike said, like an arcade game.
I don't know. As you're eating, guys, though, it's a pretty sweet sound effect.
You pretty much have to. You can play muted and listen to podcasts or whatever. Yeah. Like, you know. It's.
But the other sound effects are good, like the whistling wind and, you know, howling and minor yips and other stuff. Like, all that stuff is fine. It could have been atmospheric and just put like a little violin over the top of it or something, and you're fine.
And we have to mention that there's no options to turn off the music in game.
Yes. Bafflingly, you can.
It is very Japanese in origin. It has a lot of the tropes of weird Japanese games. But. Interesting.
Yeah, the best animal I've unlocked so far is the cheetah. I just got the cheetah today.
Yeah, we did it tonight.
From the hyena. I took down a bunch of cheetahs. I'm this close to, like, bears.
Then the game will get sweet. Dude, I heard.
Dude, I'm going to get a regular bear. And then a polar bear.
You should get the giraffe. You should just pay for that and get it.
No, get the wallaby. The wallaby would be fun.
And then I, of course, played more FTL. That game's still good.
FTL is good.
Unlocked the Stealther. So yeah. Now I have like 5 ships, I think.
Yeah.
I heard that it was good to like go watch playthroughs of that game. I know somebody watching like YouTube playthroughs of that.
You know, I will recommend. There's one in particular, which is Day 9's playthrough. Yeah. He does like, I mean, he's got like 6 parts up. They're each one. He does one part per galaxy. Map, yeah. Right? So it's one part per segment, right? So each one is like 20 minutes long because it takes you about that long to get through one, one galaxy map. Particularly episode 2 of that is pretty funny because he has never played it before and he's just like figuring out systems and dying a lot and like, oh shit, this, you know, he just keeps realizing as stuff happens. Yeah. I opened all the doors on my ship. I didn't know, like, you know. It's pretty fun.
What I really want to see is someone like speedrunner or someone
who's really good.
Someone who's really good on normal.
Yeah.
Because all I could find is like easy playthroughs with people doing okay and occasionally doing well. But I did that. I want to see somebody who's crazy good on normal.
The one I saw that somebody seemed like they were good, although I didn't watch it for that long, is not. It's not available as a VOD, as far as I know. I just watched it on a live stream on Twitch. Was. Somebody who was using the teleporter, which I've tried a couple times and requires intense micro. I cannot really make that build work, but I think you need to get the Zoltan. No, the Mantis.
Yeah, you need 2 Mantises.
You need the Mantis ship, which comes with teleportation to begin with, and you obviously have 2 Mantises to begin with. And then you get more crew to man your stations and use the Mantises as your beam aboard, you know, death crew.
I once had 2 Mantises and a teleporter and tried that. And it's, I think, tough. That's the only way to go. Because you can only send 2.
Yeah.
And any other 2 will get owned.
The rock, maybe. Because they have double health.
Yeah, that's true. I never used a rock. I haven't tried that. I'll try that. Anyway.
But I think that is probably the way to go if you're doing a normal...
Crew invasions?
Yeah, the invasion. I think you can be super. It seems like you could be really, really effective doing that. Like, I think, send them in to take out ships.
In order to be successful, you just have to have multi-track, you know, strategies.
You
have to have specialize. Weapons and also have a bunch of drones, or you need like drones, and also you need boarding parties and mantises, or you need to have multiple strengths and areas of.
I did a run as the rock ship, and that one is, see, so much of it comes down to what you get like at the first 2 stores, because
that's totally true.
If you get an awesome thing at the first store, then you're like, sweet, this is going to be a good run, and you can tell like I'm going to do well. Like if you get the rock ship and then in the first 1 or 2 stores you find like burst laser 2, you're like so golden, because the rock ship has really good defense and it but it's, you only have missiles, and so unless you get something else, you are just scrounging for missiles forever. And so, I don't know. A lot of it has to do with, like, okay, what's my build going to be
based on what I get in the first two stores, you know, how is this going
to
take me down?
Usually from the very first store, I either decide to get something there and invest in it, or just invest heavily in my ship instead of buying anything.
Right, right.
And then just go heavy ship upgrades on whatever I started with.
Yeah.
Anyway, played a ton of Super Hexagon because it finally came to Android. Totally released on Android at 99 cents.
And it's selling really well, there, too.
Better than iOS,
selling,
I think.
Great in the first few days. And
good job, Terry Cavanaugh.
Play it on my tablet and my phone. It's, like, brilliant on either. I can get, the, like, the same scores on both, which is really surprising.
It is?
Yeah, surprising to me. Almost, I would expect it to be everything to be superior and easier on tablets. Just because it's bigger. But that specific game controls brilliantly on phone. I think it's the best game on phones ever. I can't think of anything even close. It just controls perfectly, even on phones.
I totally disagree with that, but that's fine.
Well, you have to give me a list.
No. I mean, I don't agree that it handles perfectly. I don't like how it handles.
I think you just need more practice.
I think it does handle perfectly as far as its control set is. Like, I think once you start using it, you basically, like, you know how long you tap to move to the next segment, and it's just, like, watching
and reacting.
Maybe I just
suck, but I don't feel that way. I feel like it's still kind of, it's still just a little arbitrary, and I can't control it the way, I can't move just as much as I want to. It always moves a little different than how I think it's going
to
move.
It's not arbitrary at all. It just requires practice, and you don't like it enough to put it into practice, so...
It just seems fine. But the fact that it's unintuitive to me makes me not want to play it.
Josh is right that it just requires practice, but Josh is wrong that it's the best game ever on.
Yeah, that's
phone.
Definitely wrong. There's
that is
no
not
way
true.
It's the best game ever.
We'll
come up with
nothing
lists.
Else is even close.
We'll come up with
lists. You can make a list.
Okay, we should make a list for next week.
We should fight about it.
We should. This is important.
Okay, it's the best on Android then, because I haven't played. You know, most of the best stuff on iPhones you guys have shown me and. Generally not super impressed, but that one...
But you are someone who loves mechanics. Like, loves game mechanics.
Yeah,
right?
It's a flawless mechanic.
Yeah, I agree.
I got to 66 seconds on Super Hexagon. I beat fucking Super Hexagon. And I've gotten to, like, 49 seconds on Hexagoner.
Nice.
Shouldn't you just play Hexagonist? Like, maybe that's the way to play this game, is not to do any of the other ones.
No, progression.
Just like, no, do Hexagonist, and then you'll be awesome at everything.
No, it's the opposite. Hexagonist seems impossible until you get better at Hexagon and Hexagoner. Like, Hexagoner seems, like, crazy hard until you're good enough to beat Hexagon. Once you've beaten Hexagon, you're good enough to take on Hexagoner really well. And I'm close to beating Hexagoner, so I'm close to being able to take on Hexagonist.
Interesting.
Then the same for the three Ultras after that.
There are three? What? There are more than those three?
When you beat Super Hexagon,
you
unlock Ultra Hexagon.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, it goes hard, harder, hardest, and then you unlock
more
Hardester.
Hard.
And then I have not unlocked the rest, but I'm getting there.
So there are six
levels?
Six potential levels?
Yeah, there's three basics and then three Ultras.
That's crazy pants.
Yes. I tried the Dust 514 beta. It's alright. It's, I don't know. I don't even need to talk about it. It's the EVE Online integrated first-person shooter. It's just a little janky. Maybe if you spent a lot of time, you could get hardcore enough into it that it would be fulfilling, but it's just, on its surface, it's not a super engaging, polished shooter. We tried Unfinished Swan.
Yes.
That is interesting. You shoot black stuff.
Very interesting.
Paint. You're in a completely white environment where you cannot see anything, and the only thing you can do is walk and jump, and you don't even know that you're walking or jumping because all you see is white.
Well, you have audio cues.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
You have
the walking cue seems weird. It seems like you're walking way too fast.
You have pretty good 5.1 like positional audio to help you figure out where you are, but
if you have 5.1 audio.
Also, you throw, like, balls of black paint. So, you gradually paint your environment in order to see your environment.
Yeah.
So, it's a really brilliant, interesting concept. But, yeah, I don't know how far it's going to go from there. And last one is I started playing Far Cry 3, which I think seems very, very good. Finally got it on a sale.
Seems good.
I don't need to talk about it yet, because I just barely started.
Open world, action.
Kind of,
yeah, it's good.
Kind of seemed like Dead Island with guns.
Uh-huh. No, Dead Island has no guns?
Well, it's mainly melee. There are some guns, but you mainly melee.
We forgot to mention in news Disney Infinity, which seems kind of interesting. Did you see that stuff? Did you see that stuff? Disney Infinity. It's Disney's Skylanders in essence. So it's a. Do you know what Skylanders is?
I do.
You mean they're about to release toys and games?
Yes. So it's a U.S. So Skylanders and this new Disney Infinity are based around like a USB portal that plugs into your console and that uses RFID to identify tags in, like a unique ID in a physical action figure, right? So you buy the action figure and you put that on the portal and then that character shows up in game and you can play as it.
Right. That does sound like Skylanders.
So the Disney Infinity, it's like an open world. It's like Minecraft meets Skylanders. So it's like an open world. It's like the toy modding engine from the Toy Story 3 game, which was actually critically pretty well received and like a critical hit and actually relative commercial success too. But like a lot of game, you know, respected game journalists who you wouldn't think would like a game like that, like it's for kids or something. There was a particular mode, like the sandbox mode in that Toy Story 3 game that was apparently really good. So it's basically a whole game of that. You buy your dude, you buy Buzz Lightyear, right? You put him on the portal, he shows up. Not only can you now play as him, but he comes with essentially like a little 6-hour standalone single player game, right? So you unlock, basically, it's an open world with branching off into single player games associated with each of the little characters. I think that sounds pretty awesome, actually. That's very cool. I'm not that into the Disney licenses, but it's a really cool concept.
Seems like a good thing for kids.
Seems like a good thing for kids, but it seems
like... I don't
really
want to buy action figures. So.
Yeah, but just that structure, right? That seems like a cool way to do... you know, it's like a cool DLC concept. You know, the being able to... Especially if you have all these characters that you really like. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to play with Buzz Lightyear along with Cinderella, along with Pinocchio, along with Lightning McQueen, you know, mash it all up and stuff. I think it sounds interesting. They're going to make a fucking $1 billion, obviously.
I think the concept is great, and I think they're going to make a lot of money, because previous to Skylanders, everybody who's attempted, like, weird special devices bundled with weird random games not on major consoles mostly have been trashy throwaways, even if they had interesting ideas with their combinations of hardware with game.
Except for the Burger King games.
I wouldn't put that in the category because they weren't like hardware. They weren't like toys with games, right? Previous to Skylanders, all toy games were janky.
Rob the Robot, right?
Terrible.
From with the NES? Wasn't this Robbie the Robot? What was the robot on the
Rob,
NES?
R-O-B. Yeah.
But Skylanders is like the first one that's like a decent game and on major consoles, like all major consoles. So it totally took off, even though it's a pretty mediocre game.
Yeah.
So yeah, they don't have to make a very good game for this concept
but
to
they're
be
calling,
really
they're,
successful.
They're
but
calling
if,
it the Toys to Life genre. They've got a name for the genre, so I would expect that there are a lot more of these coming.
Yeah, you know, there might be all kinds of imitations, so maybe none of them are going to make as much money as the original, but I doubt that because I don't think Skylanders is that good, and if, like, anyone comes along and actually makes good games with that concept, really good, not just okay for major consoles, then they're going to be crazy successful.
Yeah, I agree. I am halfway through episode 3 of The Walking Dead. That game is really good, as these guys have mentioned. We'll do a spoiler cast on it. We've already been talking offline a little bit about different decisions we've made. It's fascinating. Fun to talk about. Very well done. That game is great. I played a lot more FTL. We just talked about that. I got to the second evolution of the final boss. Still haven't been able to kill him. And it hurts so bad to lose quickly in that game. Like, I know this is the essence of roguelikes, but you get pretty invested.
You can't get committed,
you get
man.
Surprisingly invested. It's not like, what's the other roguelike that came out this year? The Spelunky?
Spelunky.
Right? Mm. Spelunky, it's kind of fun to die because you die in this weird way. Like, you hit a mine, it bounces you off a thing, and you know, a spider's on your face, and then there's a pool of water and a piranha eats you, and you're like, oh, that was hilarious and crazy how that, you know, all chained together.
Wow. That was not my Spelunky experience.
That happens often. I mean, just weird shit like that. My experience
was I walked off a cliff I meant to, like, jump off or climb off, and therefore fell too far and just died.
Yeah, that can happen too.
Seem like a reasonable death.
But, you know, you get 5 or 6 galaxies in, and then you barely make it through a fight, and you come through to another one, and oh shit, and you die, and you feel really kind of crushed. Or I do anyway. I get attached. And I played the demo, the first world of Nit or Night Underground that Josh has been recommending, and I don't like it, really. We have total opposites on Mark of the Ninja and this game. It seems super atmospheric. The character art bugs me a little bit. It's like weird and like cartoony, but not in a good way. It's just like cartoony in a slapdash and shoddy way.
In the talk bubbles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the talk bubble character art is like weird flash game, pretty cheap and kind of dumb. But in-game art is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's...
The environments, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. But, I mean, it's just like big, super large pictures of leaves.
Right? It's a lot of variety, though.
Okay.
There's like, what, 1,800 screens? There's
1,800 screens.
Yeah, I know that it's...
And it just keeps changing and keeps changing and keeps changing. There's so much variety.
What I saw in the demo was lots and lots of big up-res leaf textures when I was above ground, and like big up-res, or not up-res, like downsampled, or just like
blown up,
but not very well, like, you know, slightly pixely, but not so pixely that it's pixel art, just like kind of pretty cool looking, you know, chains and spikes and stuff.
So I also played this demo, and I also watched a Let's Play of the original Nit, which took about half an hour, and I totally get the appeal of these games of In a Deep Forest, Nit Stories. There was Nit Experiment, I guess. I never played that. When I was watching the Let's Play, the guy who was doing it was his online name is Deceased Crab. He talked about how Nit, the original Nit, was definitely more like the most beloved by Niflis, because it is like just absolute exploration, like just walk around this big world, like no real enemies to kill you, like not a lot of ways to kill you, just explore. And then he tried, I think, in Nit Stories and Nit Experiment to add more like gamey stuff, like quests and power-ups and stuff like that, like give it more than just walk around this world. And that was actually one of the things that was not really annoying, but it almost just seemed unnecessary in Nit Underground to have like, oh, let's talk to this random dude, and oh, they lost their thing in some over here, go find it, kind of a thing. Like, you know, it almost seemed like, I you know, Nit seems really, like, pure, even though it's probably the simplest and, like, the graphics are the most, like, simple. But that was, like, a really pure experience. I love the music. I love the feeling of just kind of being in his little worlds. They're really cute and interesting. And Nit Underground seems, like, more of the same. It seems cool. But... You know, I mean, I'm not sure if I'll keep playing it. I mean, like, I like it, but I don't love it like Josh does. So
the control,
like, I respect it, but it's just not. I don't know. It's just there.
It's cool. Found the controls. I think I basically agree with you. I found the controls a little fiddly in the cases where it's trying to do platformy stuff. I didn't find the controls to be super tight or good, really very good at all. Do you play with a controller, Josh?
I played it with a controller on PS3, so I'm really curious now to try the PC version of the demo to see if it's down-resed at all, if it's not in 1080p, or if the control is laggy.
Well, it wasn't in 1080p because I played on my laptop, so, and my laptop is not a 1080p display.
Okay.
So,
or to see if the control is laggy at all. But on PS3, the control is tight as hell, and it's a really good tight platformer. And later, some of the, like, you know, navigation difficulty puzzles, they get pretty challenging, and not super challenging, but
yeah, I found
kind of half cerebrally challenging and half execution.
I found the platforming to be a little annoying. I just didn't have something that really made me want to go through the game. Like, having played the demo, so I played through the demo where you're just the girl. I played through it gives you a little area to play with and explore with the ball girl mechanic and the swapping between them. Played through that. That seemed fun, but both of those seemed fun as like a $10, like 100 screen XBLA game. I cannot possibly imagine a scenario in which I would want to play 1800 screens of this game. Like, there just wasn't a reason for me to want to go through it. Is there more story that makes you want to go through it, or is it just literally the exploration? Because the exploratory parts seemed like there wasn't really, like, just going through it to see it didn't seem fun. Just
the story is not the best part, but it gets more interesting. Not just tolerable. It gets kind of interesting because, in not really just the story, but I mean the dialogue. Because you start having two companions that talk a lot because your main character is mute, but your companions like talk on your behalf, and you start choosing whether you want like the bitchier or the nicer companion to like talk on your behalf. So it gets kind of funny and witty at times.
Yeah, there were definitely some like cute one-liners and.
Yeah, but it's totally random because, like, you can explore in any direction in any order. So it's not a super linear story. It's, like, all kinds of random little conversations here and there. But that is not the strongest part. The platforming and puzzling gets better because there are lots of new mechanics that get introduced with colored light that gives you temporary power. And there end up being a bunch of different colors. And then there end up being a bunch of multi-screen puzzles where you have to navigate maybe six screens very quickly on a timer, or you have to, like, close doors, go all the way around four or five screens, and then be able to come back to the one you were on from a different angle to get through in a different direction. And then there's different environmental stuff, like blocks that move in unpredictable ways, and... there's a lot of variety. It's just an enormous amount of variety. But if you don't like the beginning part, then I couldn't imagine you like the rest. I know it's not for everybody. But if you like the beginning, there's no reason that you won't continue to like what it keeps giving you all the way through. It's just more and more new and interesting content throughout.
Well, I didn't hate it, and I didn't hate it. I didn't even really dislike it. I just found that stuff.
This wasn't compelling.
Yeah, I just like it just didn't give me a reason to want to keep playing.
Yeah, it's not your thing. Yeah, no, sorry.
I mean, I played Metroid once, right? Or I played Super Metroid once, just kind of to have done it. So that style of game is not my thing. Although I did really like
play Super Metroid.
Yeah.
Maybe what? Just because you played it now. I don't know, because that's like one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't dislike it, but that is not a genre that I seek out and play. The one, actually, what was the one with the guns recently? The
one with the guns.
Shadow
Complex. That was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. That was basically Metroid.
Yeah. In Metroidvania. Yeah.
And this is basically like that without combat. With more platforming, and it's prettier.
Yeah. Although there are,
and the story
there are enemies, but there's no... And there is minor combat. Like, I did kill an enemy at one point.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway. Fans of the genre will find something to like here.
Yeah.
Any games, Mike?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Apparently I have 2 minutes to talk about them. So I played Knit Underground. We talked about that. I started playing Joe Danger on iPhone. That came out.
Yep.
That game is great. I actually played it on the PS3 once, and it seemed cool, and it seems it's a perfect match for a touch-based interface, so if you like a more arcadey Trials, that's basically what it is. I didn't get into XCOM because it costs money, whereas I got a 12-year-old game in my chosen game world. Fallout Tactics is 12 years old. It came out 2001. I got it basically free through Best Buy because I bought something and had like reward money or something, so that's totally my jam. Think of it like XCOM, except in the Fallout 1 universe overhead, but the same kind of, like, you have a squad, and you're on a map, and you have objectives, and there is combat. So I really dig that. Been playing still a lot of LEGO LTR, mainly because Robin likes it, and it's a great co-op game. There's no death, so it doesn't scare her away. It's fun to figure out the puzzles. It's cute. It's kind of an open world MMO light now, unlike the previous games. But I also have bad things to say about it, because the interface does have issues. The controls can be buggy. I hate in every LEGO game that you have to play through the whole game in story mode before you can play it through it again in free play mode, where you can actually get all of the unlockable collectible shit, because it's totally a collectible.
That's bullshit.
Collectible heaven. That's game.
Collectible bullshit.
It is a bit of a collectible bullshit game, but I don't know. I still
did
like
I just
it.
Coined that phrase because that's awesome.
Maybe you did.
I want credit for that. Collectible bullshit is good.
Should I add that to the website alongside buttery nut stuttery and good, whatever the other one was that I forgot to add?
You know what? Those 100 feathers in Assassin's Creed 2? That's collectible bullshit.
Yes. I read recently that the next two LEGO games that are coming out are a Marvel Superheroes game, so basically LEGO Avengers, and also a LEGO GTA-ish light game, which should be very interesting. So it's like GTA, but in a LEGO world. I don't know exactly how that will work, but
literally or similar.
It's not actually GTA. No, it's just a GTA. I think it's license. Called like LEGO Undercover City or something like that. But it is a. But it Weird. Looks like a GTA-ish open Man, world city,
whole genre.
Do
I
quest
can't
kind of things.
That LEGO continue. Games are a thing.
Dude, LEGOs are awesome. So successful. It's nostalgia yeah. sells games.
So
and,
funny.
And it's it really. I think it really it takes an interesting. Viewpoint of established properties like Batman, Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and, you know, gives a new, interesting, accessible avenue for a lot of people who maybe are not as good at games because they're much easier, and they're cute, and Legos are cute.
If they make a Lego Aliens, maybe I'll play it.
There you go. See, they just haven't made one in a property you want to play.
Lego Prometheus.
And you can't die, and they have drop in and out co-op, which is honestly, I think, what sells it. Like, you can be playing the game, and someone can just come in and start playing with you like it was nothing. And that's
great.
That
is a cool feature.
I love that. I think, I wish every co-op game had that option.
Yep.
And then one final thing. This is actually a massive critique, and maybe, I don't know, Josh, if you want to have this discussion again, but Final Fantasy, All the Bravest, came out recently, which is for iOS. All the Bravest, ATB, Active Time Battle. So this is a game that costs $3.99 and basically involves, it's just a series of battles. You can have up to 40 people. It's like old school, you know, 8-bit or 16-bit RPG. Your guys are on the right, enemies are on the left, like turn-based battle, except it's not, it's just active time battle. You have up to 40 characters, and once their little active time bar fills up, you can tap them and they can attack the enemy. And you can do that to all of your enemies. You can just, or guys, you can just tap them, and every time you tap them, they'll attack, and then they'll start filling up, and you hit them, and they attack, and you hit them, and then eventually you either defeat the monster, or all your guys die. And that's it. That's the whole game. And apparently, every review I've read of this is, all you do is you basically just take the phone, and you just kind of go like, and you just rub your dudes. You just massage your dudes until they attack. You just keep doing this. So as soon as their gauge gets up, you attack. And that's it. That's the only strategy. You can pay money. You can pay 99 cents for new characters, except it's a blind box choice. So you don't even know who you're getting. It's just
random.
Pulls it out of a hat kind of a thing.
Can you get the same guy twice? Can you pay for the same guy twice?
I don't know that. I don't think so. But I don't know. And also, I've heard that basically it doesn't take very long, maybe, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of playing the game, if even that long, where the enemy scales difficulty so hard where you will basically die. Like, everybody dies
regardless.
At that point. And you have to wait 3 minutes to get a guy back into action. So you basically are just dead. Or, of course, you can pay to get, like, you know, an item to revive
instant
them.
Res.
So
if Phoenix down.
It is an F2P game with an initial price tag, which is... Even for Square Enix, that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't apparently have any real rewarding gameplay, unless you just really like the concept of old-school 8-bit RPG battles, or you just really like the music. If you really like the music, buy Theatrhythm and play that game instead.
Just to be clear, you're basing this entire opinion on not having played the game at all.
I am. But I've heard everybody say the exact same thing.
Okay.
enough.
I just wanted to make clear, we're not speaking from first-hand experience here.
No, but we're don't buy this game. Don't give Square Enix, don't reward them for this kind of game, because it sounds like bullshit. Don't believe me, buy the game. I don't care.
I don't think it necessarily sounds like bullshit. I don't think it's necessarily worth $4 out of your pocket.
Would you pay $4 if it was on Android to try it out?
Maybe not, but I'd like to try it.
Right, but I don't want to give them money to do this, so I'll find another patsy this time.
Right.
I was wrong about Theater Rhythm. I was not excited about that. Josh made me download it. Now it's one of my favorite iOS games. I'm gonna balk at this one. So, anyway.
Yeah, I don't have really that much love at all for Final Fantasy, so.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It will not win over anybody that doesn't love Final Fantasy, but even the people who love them, I would say
are kind of pissed about it.
Take a pass.
It does seem to be. I mean, have you read any like positive reviews?
Mike's read a bunch of reviews.
Opinions anywhere. I really have not seen any positive opinions.
I've read all negative. I read one guy who was basically saying that structuring games piecemeal like this is basically the future, and it's not a bad thing. But he didn't really defend the game. He was just saying that their right to do it this way is good, and it may portend better things in the future. But he did not say
that seems like the worst aspect of it.
He was defending Theater Rhythm.
Well, and he was defending this game. He was saying it's not the portent of Doom that everybody is saying it is.
He barely mentioned this game at the top. Then he goes on to defend Theater Rhythm repeatedly, saying it's a good game. Which you agree with.
Right, Theater Rhythm is a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a rhythm game that actually has rewarding gameplay.
Because the business model here seems like the worst thing about it. The fact that it's...
If it was free...
Free to play and has a
right, if
price,
it were free, I would have tried it. But the fact that it's $4, the fact that it's more than like most of the apps on my phone, no.
Yeah, it's not free to play.
Right.
It's pay to play.
It's, yeah, like pay to win. That's the part that you don't want.
Yeah,
right?
It's kind of pay to win, it's which pay to is win. Kind of lame.
Yeah. That sucks.
So, anyway.
Or it's pay to progress faster, which right. A lot of things are yes. Pay to progress faster.
Right. But those things are almost universally free, right? Tiny Tower, etc.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Thank you for listening to this super fast episode of the Escort Mission.
Woo! We did it, almost. We almost did it in an hour.
Yeah, we had the alarm go off, but we're not being jerks about it. No, Nobody vetoed anything.
We probably already got cut off by it.
Possible. If we did.
It's still going.
We're still recording. Sweet.
No, I see bars moving.
All right.
We're good.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week, or we won't, but we might not.
There's
Dude,
always the
we're
chance.
We're playing games next week.
Oh, yeah.
So, it might
so we'll
be,
record. Oh, yeah, we're going to play
It might be a board
tabletop.
Gaming exclusive.
We're playing games next week? What are you talking about?
John.
Board games.
Oh, yeah, John's coming to town.
Yeah,
we're going to
play like,
board games. We're going to have a special board game episode.
Board game only episode.
Tabletop games.
We're not going to talk about news. We're not going to talk about video games.
We're not.
We're only going to talk
about
board games.
No, I'm down with that. Screw everything. Let's just talk about board games.
Board
like
game
everything.
Exclusive.
Then you'll have more stuff to say next time.
Lame. Okay. Well, thank
Veto.
You for listening.
There. We used one.
I have been Chaz. Mike has been Mike.
I'm Mike.
Josh has been Josh.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. Hit theescortmission.com to check out our social media stuff. Mail at theescortmission. Send us mail. Force me to sing the mailbag theme in various ways. And go to our Amazon link on escortmission.com and buy some stuff on there. Buy any of these cool games and help support the show. Later.
Late.